Night Dinner Now. We're back, and it feels so good because we were on a little hiatus when I was off.
Yes.
And we had, despite my crazy fall work schedule, summer and fall, we didn't miss a podcast every single Sunday. All the way through December.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And then we kind of got off track when I was on vacation, but we're back and we're doing 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier. We got a full cast of 6 people in the room today. We have some great topics. This is probably the most. I went into this morning not knowing what we were going to talk about other than the woman's thing.
March, right?
And actually, we knew about we're going to talk about the dispensary,
okay.
But I didn't have anything underneath that.
Okay.
But we have a packed show.
Yes, we do.
A packed show. We have two people that have never been on the podcast before: Brandon Pratt and longtime FOB Pauline Bresnahan.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
There you go. Joel Favaz is with us.
Hello.
Brandon's with us.
Good morning.
Donna Arizoni from Somerville, Massachusetts is with us.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Pauline and Kim Smith.
Good morning, Gloucester.
All right. The first order of business. Joel Favaza and Brandon Pratt are here. In what capacity are you speaking? Are you speaking for Happy Valley Ventures?
Yes.
Okay. So we have been talking for the past month,
right,
about trying to get some real answers about how the legalization of marijuana in Massachusetts is going to affect citizens of Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Because everybody has rumors, and most of the stuff I've heard is positive,
right,
a little bit of negative, but not a whole lot. But everybody's talking about they know exactly what it's all about, but we're here to talk to people that are actually involved.
In it, right.
At the four of it. Brennan, can you explain to me what Happy Valley Ventures dispensary and cultivation facility is?
Happy Valley Ventures is in the process of obtaining building permits to build a 40,000 square foot cultivation facility and a 5,000 square foot retail medical marijuana facility in the Blackburn Industrial Park. We will looking to open a business to not only cultivate but also dispense medical marijuana to the Cape Ann residents.
Medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana.
Only. Okay. All right. So.
Prescription.
You have to be certified by the state with a card, with a recommendation from a physician in order to get this product.
Okay.
Okay. There has been permits already to open one, is that right? So now you're looking for building permits to actually create the facility?
Yeah, so the City of Gloucester zoning ordinance has a lot of hurdles to overcome to open one of these facilities. And so we've been through a series of permitting with the planning board. We've been through a series of permitting with the city council. We have to go back, now that we have our city council permit in hand, and wrap up with some more technical review from the planning board and some technical review from the conservation commission. And that only is just because there's wetlands near the site. And then with those last two boxes checked, we'll be able to proceed to pull a permit, begin construction, and once the building's up, you begin operating.
Yeah,
we're trying to do this as soon as possible as well. This is a very fast pace.
Yeah, old business and money that's, when you get loans and stuff like that, the it's churning. The money that you put out is not working for you. So, and you'd like to have that money working for you. So what exactly is the location?
38 Great Republic Drive, which is in the Blackburn Industrial Park. It's towards the back where it abuts the end of Pond Road.
Yeah, so if you're heading down toward the NOAA building.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Great Republic starts coming down the hill, starts curving to the right.
Yeah.
There's a dirt lot on the left that has nothing built on it. That's the blank lot we're putting to use.
Yeah. Is it the very last one?
No.
There's ones after that?
Last unbuilt lot?
No, the last lot on that stretch.
It'd be the last one on the left as you go around the corner. And then you take the corner and you go past, you go toward the NOAA building at that point. But we're before the NOAA building, the last possible lot on the left-hand side to do anything with.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So that you passed the, what is it, Standard Electric? What is the?
Yeah.
No, FW Web.
FW Web, and then we're right next door to Spittle Electric.
Okay, there you go.
Well, good.
So can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
I have a question about what kind of things you have to go through with a conservation commission, because that's what I hear a lot about is like how the agricultural runoff from cultivating, you know, great amounts of marijuana will affect the wetlands. So that's a question that I and other people have been talking about. So.
Sure. So the reason we're in front of the Conservation Commission is because there are existing wetland resource areas in the Blackburn Industrial Park. This site happens to be, I would say, half of it is filled upland, the dirt that you see as you drive down the road. And then the back portion of the site is about 20 feet lower in elevation, and there's a wetland down there. And so the only thing Conservation Commission is going to look at is to make sure that what we're doing up top on the filled portion isn't going to have adverse effects to the wetland down below. As far as discharge, any water used in the cultivation process has to be put through a pre-treatment system on site and then discharged into the city sewer. So you can't be running the hose through the flower bed and then out the back door.
The
it has to go into a system, and then before you can tie into the sewer, this came up during permitting, we already came up with a pre-treatment system.
We're going to work closely with the DPW to come up with a plan that works.
Because I don't know this. Do you use a lot of toxic chemicals in marijuana cultivation?
No.
So there's no, like, you know.
Pesticides, because you're inside, right?
Right.
I can't comment on the pesticides, but I know that, you know, there's fertilizers that are being used in other, you know, in water. But, you know, what the type of discharge that comes out of it, you know, we're still going through that phase, and then what type of treatment will be done before it's released back.
I know that Mazzetta just cited, when, you know, they've scaled back their operation, which is right up there.
Okay.
They cited one of the main reasons that they are withdrawing from doing business in Gloucester is the high what it costs for water and sewer.
The incoming and outgoing.
Right.
Incoming and
right.
outgoing. Right. That was in that article.
Right.
That's what I picked up on.
No.
They said, you know, if it made sense to do business, but that was a highlight of the article. So, okay, here are the questions. So we know what's being proposed. It's a medical dispensary and cultivation facility. So people should not assume, if I'm understanding this right, and I think I do, that and because marijuana has been legalized in Massachusetts, that you can, that
it's
Joey Scimitaro, you can't buy marijuana like you can go buy a six-pack of beer if you're 21 or old.
The state hasn't come up with any rules on recreational marijuana. Nobody knows what's going to happen and how it's going to play out.
Right.
I know there's been a lot of concern in Gloucester about these smoke shops that are popping up. That's, you know, something different than what we're doing. We have no involvement with that. We're just doing the medical. Marijuana.
And I would foresee it would go beyond Cape Ann too, right? Like if you're growing it right here, it's locally grown, so you don't have to transport it. So it could be.
Well, we'll have two other facilities, one in East Boston and one in Amherst, and this will be the cultivation facility that will supply both of those shops as well.
Oh, okay.
So we'll be hiring local people to develop the product
here,
and then we're going to ship it throughout
North
the state.
Shore, practically.
Well, we want to develop a best-in-class shop, so we hope to attract people from other markets to come in, you know, with hopefully having a very, very nice state-of-the-art facility with great product that people want to come.
There is psychiatrists in the area already who have.
Well, psychiatrists don't.
Well,
it's
I have
more of a. It's a doctor that will have to prescribe it to you.
But I know a psychiatrist who has a license.
Recommend. That's correct.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Julie. Yeah. They can. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the interesting things you touch upon in highlighting the fact that, you know, Gloucester's going to have this facility producing medical marijuana is that current regulations require that you go what's called seed to sale. So if you are a medical marijuana dispensary, you're only allowed to sell the product that you have produced. So for instance, if there was another dispensary in Beverly, they would not be able under current regulation to purchase any wholesale medical marijuana from our facility.
I see.
It's just the way, you know.
I imagine that has to do with having control over being responsible, like they do with fish. The, you know, everything has traceability to it.
Yes.
So I imagine that, my guess is that that's a big part of that. To say, okay, you bought it, this is where we got it, this is where it was prescribed, this is where they bought it. If they, and that way there you can't have any kind of contaminated, you know, because you mean,
I think it's also a method of control.
Tracking sales.
Yeah, on the, and on the regulation side to make sure that the people in this business are serious players. If you look at the state regulatory process to get state approval, proving, you know, the filing fee alone is $50,000.
I can't imagine.
You have to, you know, the capitalization you have to prove before you're able to move from phase one to phase two. Mm-hmm. I think this is a regulation that's in place to make sure that there are serious companies with a long-term view that you can't just kind of try out running a medical marijuana shop.
And that will help you guys in the long run too, because then every, you know, jokester can't.
A barrier to entry. It creates a barrier to entry.
Absolutely. Right. Yes, absolutely. Right. Yes. That's why you don't see them everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting to me, like, that, you know, if you took for a cultivation, see, this is a kind of a thing that goes back to the waterfront, right? You can process fish on the waterfront land, right? Mm-hmm. But is it the best use for waterfront property when you could have a facility that processes fish in an industrial park?
In Blackburn.
Right. In Blackburn Industrial Park or even cheaper land, like out in
further
away from Gloucester, Mass, where there's real estate is expensive. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. What do you... And you don't. Maybe you don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do. What is the thought process of doing it in like a kind of an urban area as opposed to like farmland, like a cultivation, like, you know, in farmland where there's, you could have acres.
Because you know why? Because it's cultivation and dispensary, and you want people around to dispense it to.
Well, I want him to answer.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Are you asking us why we pick Gloucester?
I'm asking you, if you know the thought process of why you would do it in a place where there's more expensive real estate rather than farmland, like, maybe you could speak to that.
Well, part of our process was scouting locations where you have marijuana zoning available, first of all. You also need to find land that's available, and you also need to attract people to work there. And you also want to have a dispensary where there are people. You don't want to have it in a rural area. You could look in central and western Mass to do these types of things. And one of our facilities is in Amherst, Mass, which is next to farmland. My wife's from the next town over, and her dad was a tobacco farmer. There's plenty of land out there, but you can't grow it year-round outdoors. So you need it. You need it indoors.
Right,
you
know,
and this is a business, and it's a 40,000 square foot dispensary. It's two stories. And we want to make sure it's in a place where we have easy access to highways, which 128 does.
Yeah, that's right.
We want to make sure we have a good local workforce, because we are going to be providing 50 full-time paying jobs, which is great.
That's
in Gloucester, because it's more of a seasonal economy, so we're trying to do a full season jobs. And in fact, and the other fact is, you know, we know Gloucester. I grew up in Gloucester.
Right.
You know, we want to help Gloucester grow and build. So that was what you brought up.
And I think
Gloucester,
having it where you are, it's more control too.
There's no worry about residential traffic, you know, foot traffic.
Yeah,
it would be extremely minimal. It's off the highway, in and out off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it was a perfect spot, to be honest with you. It's been vacant land for a while. We're developing vacant land that's not, no taxes are being paid on it really right now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be, you know, providing 50 full-time jobs, paying taxes, and doing revenue sharing with the city as well. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So as of right now, this is a quick thing. What is needed for someone to purchase? Okay, I'm going to just back up a little bit. Right now, there is no laws about where you buy marijuana, or is there? Because they legalize marijuana. So for recreational marijuana, where can people legally buy recreational marijuana?
The state hasn't come up with any laws yet. There is no market. Right. It doesn't exist. The state,
you can grow it, right?
You can grow it in your homegrown, right?
But the question
so
is,
many plants.
Where do you
get the
seeds?
Right.
There's always something.
Right.
You know, you
right.
can possess it, and it's fine, but where did you get it?
The
person that sold it to you.
Are they legal?
Okay, did I hear something? Because I don't want to, this is why we have these guys, because they probably know this stuff inside and out. Is it true that you are allowed to have so many plants in your house for or no?
You're talking on the recreational side?
On the recreational side, yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what the finite answer is to that. I know that at this point, possession's no longer illegal. It's no longer a civil infraction up to a certain amount. And I believe you're allowed recreational home growth. But as I kind of jokingly said, the question becomes, where did you get the seed? Where did you get the first plant to going? Because no one's supposed to be selling any of that to you just yet, because the regulations haven't come out just yet. And so
but no one's still going around busting people unless it's an amount. I think there's a finite amount that you can have in possession, right?
Yeah. I haven't heard of any enforcement going on.
Right.
But, from a legal standpoint, you go, okay.
Because people have it in Colorado, but you can't transport.
Right, it's crossing state lines.
I've heard people getting seeds in the mail, but they're like $100 a seed, and the seeds are coming from Canada or something like that.
Yeah,
that's
but who knows where
they're not. They're not going to speak to that, that's...
I should advise people not to use the federal postal system to transport Class A controlled
substance. A lot of stuff they should not.
Right,
well,
okay.
I'm so immersed in medical marijuana,
I think that recreational, I think the new law really helps people, because there's a very famous story about, I think it was about a year and a half ago, that a grandmother out in the western part of the state who was growing...
Amherst.
In Amherst.
Yeah, with
growing,
the helicopters.
Right, who was growing marijuana, one plant. She had one plant in her backyard, and her son came home, and there were, helicopters and DEA and... In addition to the helicopters and the DEA, there were state police. I mean, they just descended upon this one woman for her one, one grandmother for her one marijuana plant.
How long ago was this?
This was about a year and a half ago.
Oh, before it was legalized.
Yeah, before it was
legalized. So not, this is not a...
No, so I think the new recreational law will, help with things like that.
Well, we were talking this morning, a couple of fishermen were in the office this morning, and we were saying as far as one of the pluses is getting rid of a lot of burden in the court system.
Oh, absolutely.
For kind of silly,
right.
Right. Yeah, in this day and age, silly stuff. But hold on one second. Oh, this is one question I had, and is it going to be taxed in at what level? On the state level, federal level, or local level? Is there taxes or no?
So... there was state tax built into the ballot question. I'm sure the regulations that come out will have some adjustment to it. I can't imagine there'll be federal tax, because federally it's still an illegal, it's still a controlled substance.
Okay.
And then as far as local, I assume it'll be in the lines of permitting fees, licensing fees, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my guess. In the city of Gloucester, just now is the very beginning stages of thinking about how they're going to handle zoning, how they're going to handle licensing, how many licenses the city of Gloucester is willing to, issue.
Mm-hmm.
These, the...
Jesus, being at the forefront of this, I can't imagine swallowing the upfront costs. All of it is unknown.
Right.
There's no laws. Okay, we're going to put $50,000 for the permit. And we don't really know if they're going to stick it up our, then they're on and not make it worth our while. Because a lot of these things, there are a lot of businesses that, it sounds like a good business plan. But then when you go in front of the city council and everything else, they put so many restrictions or so much stuff that it doesn't make financial sense afterwards.
But I think that $50,000 gives the sincerity of... whole thing, it gives it value, I think. It's not giving
So just to make sure I'm being clear, there's a lot of question marks surrounding the recreational use, but that doesn't necessarily impact the viability of the medical marijuana market. So Colorado, it was actually several years before recreational even eclipsed medical as far as sale quantity. And one does not compete directly with the other. If you look at the type of product that you find in a medical marijuana dispensary, there are more ointments and tinctures. Mm-hmm. There are the edibles are a different type of edible. Also, the potency and what we'll see the regulations come out in this state. But what you're allowed to produce as a product for medicinal purposes is typically different than I say typically. I mean, the very few examples we have in this country. different than what you're allowed to produce on a recreational basis. Similarly, if you are a patient in need of medical marijuana, it is much more advantageous for you to continue to receive your physician's recommendation, go to a medical marijuana dispensary where you can meet with experts who can sit down, discuss product with you. It's, you know, regulated as a medical product, so you're not paying retail tax on it. When you go to the recreational side, some of these, you know, we're guessing here, we don't know what they look like, but you're more likely, you'll be on your own to figure out what you want, what you don't want. You'll pay taxes on it, you know, on a retail level.
Oh, I see.
And it's a very different process, you know, than someone who's in need of, you know, like medicinal marijuana is not simply a backdoor to sneak marijuana to someone's life.
Right.
You know, there's,
oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, but the medical industry.
Diseases that have, you know, do very well with epilepsy, glaucoma, cancer, not curing cancer, but taking away some
of the side effects.
The side effects. And, you know, it's an interesting...
You know, I can't speak to all the details, but it's really amazing. So obviously, there's the psychoactive component, and there's the also anti-inflammatory pain relief component. And the research is going on now to help remove some of the psychoactive components because, you know, for instance, if you're a 17-year-old athlete, you're a basketball player, and you break your ankle, you're at risk to be, you know, you're going to prescribe this kid opioids, you're going to give this kid Vicodin, you're going to get, you know, and run that risk that this kid starts down a really, you know, or if you're able to take the psychoactive component out of medicinal marijuana, are you then able to treat younger patients for, again, you know, the pain relief and the anti-inflammatory components without, you know, introducing them to opiates.
Like an aspirin, you know, like taking an aspirin for pain.
Medical marijuana, there are capsule forms.
Yeah.
It's one of the delivery methods.
So, besides the jobs, these are obvious, the jobs and the real estate taxes, what other benefits to the city of Gloucester, direct benefits to the city of Gloucester, does having a dispensary?
Revenue sharing.
Okay, explain that.
We are sharing percentage.
It'll be 5% by the third year. So in order to move forward to permit a dispensary, you need the city administration or town administration, wherever you are, to issue what's called either a letter of support or a letter of non-opposition, saying, you know, we don't mind this thing coming here. And that goes off to the state. And what a lot of municipalities, Gloucester included, are doing is they're saying, okay, you'd like this letter, we'd like to enter into a host community agreement whereby, you know, in exchange for this, we get something back. And so the host community agreement that the city of Gloucester negotiated, and that's a big part of, you know, why we're able to come to Gloucester. The city of Gloucester was very fair in their negotiation, but by year three, 5% of gross revenue goes to the city of Gloucester.
With a minimum of $100,000 in every year. Minimum of $100,000.
Right.
And if every year, and we're projecting, I think in year five, that could be up to $250,000 in revenue sharing to the city.
There you go.
Gloucester. You know, in addition to jobs, real estate taxes, and we'll be building these buildings and we'll be hiring local contractors and subs to do this work as well.
Yep.
Many aspects of
There you go. Here's a question. Are there laws for police officers when are there laws yet? I guess a lot of this is in the works. Are there laws, and are there ways to test people that are driving under the influence of marijuana?
Not that I know of.
I'm not aware of any right now. I know that they're trying to put something in the works to do that, but as of now, I'm not aware of any.
Is there a way to test people?
Not reliably.
On the side of the road?
No.
No.
Not that I know of.
So that's an interesting component.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean?
I know. When you think about it, to me it seems kind of silly. They've known this was coming for 40 years, right? And they haven't. They didn't, like, pre-think of some way
People have been smoking marijuana for a long time. I don't know. all of a sudden now it's a big deal?
Right.
Should have been a big deal.
To be honest, I feel as if people who smoke the marijuana don't usually get in their cars. They're eating Cheetos.
That's not true.
People drive under the influence of Vicodin and oxycodone and all that
stuff. That's correct.
And I think that's probably where it will head into driving under the influence doesn't always mean alcohol.
That's correct. I mean,
I
read the Gloucester Police notes.
Yeah, we know.
So now we know exactly what Donna's eating.
Yeah, boy.
She's eating Cheetos. We know what.
I'm gonna open this up to. I'll start with Donna. Any questions you might have for these guys?
Well, I personally, I think the medical part of it is going to help a lot of people because I work in medical, and the people with epilepsy, and they take the Dilantin, and they're off the wall. And sometimes then they don't take it. Where the medical marijuana will keep them on their meds.
You know, it could help. It couldn't help. You know, at least people have another alternative.
They do.
You know, that's the most important thing.
I think it's, and I look at you guys and I see respectable. You know, it's not what people assume.
Well, I mean, it's a medical marijuana industry.
It's medical
everybody's
marijuana.
Wrapped up in recreational, but this is not what we're here.
And
this is not
thanks
what we're
for explaining it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is more.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, probably the only 60-year-old person in the world that's never smoked marijuana.
I hear it a lot, actually. Yeah,
it's weird. And but I have two questions. I guess is security at the facility.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if other people are concerned about. Is that going to take
part of our approval
offices?
Process? Yep. With the city and the state is to have a security plan in place, and we are going to have a state-of-the-art security system with facial recognition. It's going to know when people are there, what they're buying. It's going to match up. We're going to have off-site video monitoring. I don't know how many on-site guards we're doing and what the time periods of those are going to be at this time, but it's a very, very robust plan that we've had work with the state. They have approved it, the city of Gloucester, the police chief, the former police chief, the current police chief we've been working with as well as the fire department. Everybody's on board. They'll have access to our video system if they want it. We'll share as much as we can. This will probably be one of the most secure places in the city.
I have to imagine.
I can tell you that.
It's a good question.
Ask about
that. Yeah, no, it's interesting to see here what it actually
is. It's a very common question.
Yeah, and the hours of operation. I mean, is this something that's open 24 hours a day? Or is
probably would start open between 9 and 10 in the morning, close roughly around 6 in the evening. Roughly, these are estimates.
To the security point, you know, I think it's important for people to recognize. So you get your physician's recommendation, you get a state-issued card saying you are a patient. That card is your key into any dispensary anywhere in the state. You don't get past the front door without one of these. Once you go through this, your card is recorded electronically and statewide. So for instance, if you go to the dispensary in Salem and then come to Gloucester, they'll know before you could ever get here that you were just in Salem at 1 this afternoon and you filled your prescription. So we'll see you in a few weeks.
There are limits on what, even in the medical, there's a limit on how much you can purchase.
Well, even you can't go from Walgreens to Walgreens.
Right, the state tracks all this. There's three barriers to entry. Like Joel said, the first one is you can't even get in the door without showing your license.
That's great.
Next, you're going into a vestibule that again is locked with someone behind a window looking at your card, entering all the information, tracking it. Then next phase, like in Salem, you'd actually go through a metal detector behind another locked door. Then you gain entry. So you go through three locked doors before you can even go into the dispensary portion.
And for the local police, one of the things that Happy Valley has offered, and it's yet to be seen whether they're taking up on this offer, but one of the security experts they work with, they're all either former DEA or have been out in Colorado. And so one of the services that Happy Valley is offering to the local police department is they will, at Happy Valley's expense, run training to help train local police officers with how to deal with having a dispensary and a cultivation facility in your town on the remote chance that something happens.
Mm-hmm.
One of anyone who's been to a permitting session has heard me tell this story, but it's my favorite story. Is that there's a dispensary in Salem that's in a shared building, and burglars broke into the building in some of the offices above, and they robbed a series of attorneys' offices. Didn't even bother trying to get into the dispensary because they knew it wasn't going to happen.
There's no chance.
Yeah, robbed a bunch of offices blind. Said, you know, whatever. Like, we're not going to bother with the dispensary because we know we're not getting in there.
That's really interesting.
I, I just have one question. You mentioned that you're a local person. So
yes.
Did you grow up around here?
I grew up in Gloucester. I grew up in central Gloucester, Magnolia. I graduated from Gloucester High School in 1991. And then I went to UMass Amherst, which is one of the reasons why we picked Amherst as a site.
You met your wife?
And my wife is out there. We're out there quite frequently. I was fortunate enough, I'm in the mortgage business. I also manage an office on One Main Street in Gloucester. I've been doing real estate for almost 20 years, and that's how I met Joel. And we kind of started talking. This all really came together by talking and working with the city. And I live in Topsfield now, so I'm not far away. And I do a lot of work up here, and I love Gloucester, and I like what's happening. I like with the hotel coming in. I like the fact that we need to have different and diversified jobs up here. I know the market very well, and I thought it was great. Michael, who's one of the managing partners, who I know is one of my best friends, has spent a lot of time up in Gloucester as well. So we're all very comfortable with Gloucester, and we think there's a great need for it here. There's a great location. There's a great talent force. I think all the pieces come together beautifully, and the city's been great to work with, and we're super excited to get this building permit and, you know, get it as fast as possible so we can break ground and start hiring people and build this building and open at some point in
2018. That's when you're
projecting.
Yeah. 40,000
square feet. That's
a lot of space.
It started off with 10, but there's been interest, you know, would we make an a bigger investment in the city of Gloucester, and we thought about it, and things started coming together nicely, so we've quadrupled the size of our building, which means more jobs as well.
Mm-hmm. So all of your you'll distribute to your other two locations out of Gloucester.
That's correct. Yeah, they'll supply, because again, as Joel mentioned, seed to sale. We have to grow all our product that we sell in our other locations.
Right.
So the Gloucester, you know, it's kind of like Gordon's with fish sticks.
Yep.
Yeah.
It supplies, you know, all the McDonald's with filet of fish. Gloucester will produce the product for Happy Valley, which, you know, hopefully will go larger beyond Massachusetts.
I think it's great.
Yeah. We're excited to be in the city of Gloucester, I'll tell you that.
I mean, they sell cigarettes, you know, and we don't even know what's in those. So
yeah.
Having this dispensary.
It'd be nice if there was another name for it. I think no, I don't mean it. Not the Happy Valley part, the marijuana part. Mm-hmm. Only because so many people have this negative, you know, and if they haven't dealt with the medical end of it, they don't think of it as being a...
a positive
medicine.
Thing.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's nice if they could call it, you know, jujube.
A lot of people grew up differently.
Well,
how
much nicer of a spin can you put on it than Happy Valley?
No, I'm talking about
the marijuana.
I'm talking about the marijuana
name.
The marijuana.
Marijuana.
Yeah.
It's like oxycodone. It's like you think bad things instead of good things.
Of the 60s.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a generation.
That's your opinion.
And in the middle of it, you know, like I've seen like the really progressive side, and I've seen like the don't do drug Nancy Reagan stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so I you know, I understand how people think.
Does medical cannabis sound any better?
Yeah, there you go.
That's
what I mean, though.
That's why we call it product.
Yeah, product. I like that name.
And if you talk to most physicians, they are fathers.
Yeah.
They will, yeah. They won't. Some won't say it on the record because, again, the federal laws, which are kind of archaic, but that's another topic for another time.
Thank you guys for coming in. You can sit. You're welcome to stay. The podcast usually lasts about an hour, we're going to talk about a bunch of different stuff here. But if you have to leave, you can just let me know. Thank you so much for all that.
Awesome.
I think the whole idea, and I listed out the questions that I was going to ask you, so when people see the show notes, they'll know that they can, instead of the, you know, repeating what, you know, the telephone game of what can get from here to there after going through 10 people, they can hear it from the source. So thanks so much.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Thank you.
Nice I do actually have to go. I got to go take care of my kids.
No worries.
You know, that's part of now that everything's going through. I will be working with the Happy Valley team on. I'm doing more of a social media campaign.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
okay.
I don't think we have anything like that now. Our logo is in the process of being tweaked and redesigned, and I think that will start, you know, our marketing campaign as we move forward. Right now, it's building permit.
Nothing
else, because nothing happens without, you know, us start building.
Yeah, and that gives it, again, credibility.
Yep.
And just some advice in Gloucester, everybody has a Facebook page.
I'm personally on Facebook, so feel free to friend me. Absolutely, I'm on there. I actually do Happy Valley updates, because I do go with the city council meetings and stuff.
Great.
And, you know, I know.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in.
Nice to see you.
Pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. So I think the second biggest piece of news, that was really nice.
Yeah, that was
very clear.
It was
so,
very informative.
Well, that was it. That was the whole, that's what we've been talking about for the last month was getting down to, you know, dispelling the rumor.
Brass tacks.
The I think the second biggest piece of news, maybe that for a long time, was this Women's March yesterday.
I'm just might get all the clumps.
I wish I could have gone.
So I didn't even know. I knew from James and Hannah and Anna, Hannah, Kimberly, and Aniko Eves.
Right.
Bengalese. I don't know if she goes by Eves or Bengalese or whatever. But anyway,
I can't pronounce
they started talking earlier in the week about they're going to be going to Washington for this Women's March. Now, I know that they're like psycho, not psycho, but they're like all in on the all in on the women's lib stuff.
They're
They're very progressive, you know, and stuff like that, which is great.
In a very positive way, which is great.
But that's really kind of all I heard about. All of us. So fast forward to yesterday morning,
right. Mm-hmm.
And if you were on social media, it was taken over, mm-hmm. and half of every female that I know on social media went in.
Right.
And they went to Washington, but Boston had it. I mean, it was all over the world.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't just,
it was all over the world. There were over 600 marches throughout the world. Paris,
over 600
London,
marches.
New Zealand, Ethiopia, the Middle East.
And it wasn't the people who were throwing bottles and all that. Those people don't. No, it was the peaceful March.
Kim was there, and I'm going to let her speak at length to this because she was actually there. But the thing that was very encouraging to me was that when you can amass this many people, and if you call it a protest or a march or whatever, but you do it with under the guise of love and peace, and change, but not be damaging buildings or burning things or breaking windows. I think if to affect change, this movement has to be so proud of what they are going to be able to accomplish going forward. Because if you don't think every politician is going to be swayed, if they can galvanize this movement in a positive way, because the point I really want to get to is that when there are other protests and they block the streets and they stop traffic and they smash the Starbucks windows and they do these type of things, it immediately gives, whether they are right and justified or not, it immediately gives the opposition and the politicians a reason to discount them.
Mm-hmm.
When you do this with love and peace
and permits,
when you do this with such a positive outlook and stuff like that and such a galvanizing thing, I think that the sky is the limit for what they can accomplish politically to actually do change. Now, I'm not like.
I think that's people's hopes and dreams, really. I think that was the whole purpose of it, was to be able to affect change over the long term. You know what I mean? Because it was just like, it was just so powerful being there.
That's a recurring theme for the people that were there that are speaking.
So powerful.
I did the Million Mile March way back for gun control after Colorado. When that happened, it was amazing, because we pulled that was a pulled permit, and when the opposition of gun control came through, the Capitol Police said, you have no permit, you cannot be on this mall ground, when we walked the mall. And that gives it the credibility too. The people who were destroying buildings, they didn't pull no permit. You know, they're just out there to make a noise sometimes.
Absolutely.
You know.
So Kim, describe, give us the rundown on what you saw.
Okay, well, well, it was super exciting right from the get-go because I got to the train station and in Gloucester, and I didn't, you know, I wanted to go by myself because I wanted to be up close and take a lot of pictures, and I didn't want to have to worry about my husband or anybody else.
Getting bored or not wanting to be there, so you were on your own time.
Right, so, yeah. But as soon as I got there, Jason Groh, Beau Abrams, and Jason Groh's wife, Sarah, they just were like so embracing. They had their two twin daughters who are in middle school with them, and the Groves, yeah. And then Sharon had her daughter with her, and James stayed back. Jim Dowd stayed back because he wanted to, in case he was, you know, parents were a little bit worried. There was a whole bunch of kids from the middle school going along with them as well. So parents were a little bit worried about what was going to happen. But there they are, all in their little pink hats that Sarah Groh's mom had made for them. And it was really, and Beau was just like, you have to, you know, you're going to be my partner. So you have to have a partner. Because she's very in tune to what can happen in a big crowd. She worked for Outward Bound and other things. So.
Sure. You took the train in?
We took the train in.
Okay.
And hung out with them.
Was it packed?
Yes, and it was very full. This was the 7 a.m. train.
Yep.
Because the next train wasn't scheduled until like 10:20, and then that would get you in like after it had already, was supposed to start at 11.
Yeah.
So then we went to coffee, and then we got to the common, and this was like around 8:30 or so. Also, the Groves' oldest daughter, who goes to BU, met up with them as well. So it was really
Now describe the scene in the common. Was it shoulder to shoulder?
When we first got there, like I think we got there like around 8:39, and I said goodbye to everybody then because I just really wanted to, wanted to take pictures.
Yeah.
I was standing in one spot to be fairly close to the stage to be able to. For camera equipment, and then.
But there was a main stage. There was a main.
Yes,
stage.
Yes, there was a main stage. So here's the Boston Common, and just a little up from Charles Street was where the stage was set up, and the stage was facing out into the Common. So Beacon Street was behind you. So when you first got there, you know, it was pretty crowded already, like at 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever time it was, and. The crowd just grew and grew and grew, and so by like 10:30, I was solidly locked into where I was standing. Mm. There was just like no way I was moving.
Yeah.
And then the program started, and it was just all these wonderful like women's. There were several children's choruses, choirs. Then there was a beautiful Chinese dance, which was very unusual because it's the only women Chinese dancers that do these lion dances. Typically, it's men who do it. Mm-hmm. And then we had the speakers. A beautiful a woman named Miriam. She's a reverend from a church in Jamaica Plain. Then we had...
I saw the Indian, the Amazing Grace.
Didn't you have a beautiful voice? That was.
I didn't listen to what I saw.
Somebody bumped me, so I kind of cut it off. But her name was Savannah Raintree, and she and her mom's a Native American activist, and so she sang "Amazing Grace" in both Cherokee and English. It was beautiful. It was very. I think the crowd was crying. So the speakers were Senator Markey, Elizabeth Warren. Joe Kennedy was there, Joseph Kennedy III, the redheaded one. I only got one little shot of Anne Margaret because all the state house representatives were on the stage as well.
Oh.
But the stage was so packed that they were sort of towards the back.
Mm-hmm.
So then after Senator Warren and Markey spoke, I was just like, I had been standing in one place for like 4 hours and my legs were just, I had to walk. So I just inched my way out to this strip that they had set up, and I think that was for handicapped people, but even that was packed. And then that's when I realized like I wasn't going anywhere because ComAv was one solid mass of people from any way.
Sides.
And that's where people were supposed to march.
Yeah.
So there was like, so then I'm like behind the little trailer and I didn't know it, but that's where Elizabeth Warren was. So I got some great shots of her coming in and out. And then I saw Anne Margaret Ferranti, and she kind of took me under her wing and said, "You stay with us," because she was getting a little nervous about how locked, how gridlocked it was. Mm-hmm. I'd never been in this. I'm not a super crowd person. I kind of try to avoid them. So it was. But what was so remarkable is we stood for 2 hours in one place on Calm Ave, trying to just get from here to where you're at, it's 500 feet, for 2 hours, just trying to get 500 feet, because at this point, I needed to get out, you know what I mean?
To walk, stretch your legs. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because you have bad back problems and stuff
and
like
so
that.
It took me 2 hours to get 500 feet to Charles Street to be able to break off, and a lot of people had the same idea of trying to, because they were going off of all the little side streets onto Chestnut Street, all over the hill. So the whole Beacon Hill was just
that's how it disperses after the marathon.
Yeah, but it wasn't. But the march hadn't even started yet. Yeah. The actual march around.
Did they have to clear the street? Did they have a march? Did they clear the street for a march, or was it more of we're here?
I think it was more like we're here.
We're here.
I don't think because. Because they only
more of a meeting,
right? It just became kind of a rally because everybody was so patient and so calm and so understanding. And
that happened at several cities throughout the country where planned marches had to be retooled into rallies because it was physically impossible to march that many people anywhere.
Yeah,
they expected 20,000, and what I saw on the news this morning was 175,000 people.
That's awesome.
More than more than when the Pope came, and which is that's a lot. It was interesting because people were saying, "Oh, this is where the suffragette movement started, and the tea, the original Boston Tea Party." But there weren't 175,000 people trying to do it on the common. So
here's something that I've been thinking about and watching everything that went down yesterday. So it was super impressive, right? You look, the thing was 175,000 in Boston, another 150 in Chicago. You had even in the more red states, there was at least two really big marches in Texas. There was one in Nashville, and so. The majority, at least from what I saw from news coverage, was it was not in total, but in part, protest over not to be glass half empty, but part of me said, where were all these, pink pussy hats Saturday, November 5th? If you could have amassed 150,000 people to march in Boston against these things that you find deplorable with the current president, this is you're not protesting things he said or did between Election Day and inauguration. You're protesting things he said or did 10 years ago during the primary, during the general, and they should have been. And there's a sense of comfort, I guess, that people kind of must have had. We don't need to do this. There's no way this is going to happen. Is that the reason? If there's all this energy.
I'm hoping it's the beginning of a movement.
Right.
I work for the Democratic.
It's a shame it's reaction instead of proaction.
I think this is the beginning of proaction. That's how I'm looking at it. To harness this energy and to put it towards really helping women and women's issues. And I think if you raise up the women, you raise up everybody.
I'll say this though. Yeah. The reason I think I'll go back to the way I was looking at it. Because I'm neither hard left or hard right. Yeah. I go down the middle. Right. But the reason it was very, I was encouraged by it because it wasn't. Although there was a lot of anti-Trump stuff, it seemed like it was more about issues than polarizing. Because I think when you go down, that's what's got us to the country where we are, where everything is so polarized, where the hard left and the hard right are not listening to each other. If they could just keep it to the issues and do it peacefully and join together, they're going to move legislation. Because politicians, let's be honest, more than even money. If they're scared to death that a huge voting bloc is not with them, they you see what they do. They wish most of them pretty wishy-washy, right?
And, I'm a woman in my mid-60s, and I remember in Harvard Square burning my bra for women's rights and to be able to go to work, to be able to buy a washing machine by yourself. those kind of issues. And then I saw that, sometimes I see, maybe about 10 years ago, I'm like, girls, do you have any idea how lucky you are that you're able to go to college, you're able to,
well, I think,
I was happy to see this resurgence of women.
They're feeling galvanized, they're feeling very empowered.
For issues that everybody deserves.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves the pay, the respect, all that kind of stuff. And I was glad to see that again. I felt kind of like a college student.
Well, for the people that are anti-Trump, for the people, maybe his election, like no matter who the president, in my view is, no matter who the president is, we want good things to happen. Mm-hmm. Now, for the people that are disheartened that Trump was elected, maybe the pendulum swings in relation to and in opposition to wild swings. Right. So if, say, this president does some really messed up things in regard to women, and these women are galvanized by it, don't you believe that the next time that some liberal, I mean, that this is what happened.
Right? And I think it's about complacency, what happened. We just sort of let a lot of things.
Yes, I agree.
So, and I felt that way, but I'm like, so wanted to shake.
There's a really excellent article on Yahoo News from, it was actually from June of this year. It's an interview with Shirley Manson, my personal favorite, you know, what I call feminist icon. And what she says there, she goes, you know, human rights have to be constantly attended to. You can't just secure a human right and then walk away and assume it'll stay in place. And, you know, she was talking in this interview at the time about the uprising and you know, sexism and this kind of culture that we're in now, that speaking as a, you know, someone who came to prominence in the 90s, where there was a lot of progressive women's values being championed, how'd you kind of go from 96 to 2016, what's happened in those 20 years? And, you know, she says, we didn't imbue our children with a sense of urgency and paranoia. We probably should have said, you need to wake up and stay alert and make sure you secure your rights every day. And that seems to be what this is. You know, it's almost,
they took it for granted, you're saying?
Right. Is that, you know, the same reason, the only way I can justify that there was all this energy yesterday that wasn't galvanized prior to the election. If you're really, you know, concerned about all these things that are going to be as a consequence of the election, we just had it. You know, like, you know, there was a woman running for president, you know, who was talking about these issues.
Kim, do you want to add some?
Yeah, I guess I would have to say the most deeply moving thing that I came away from it was to see all the young people there. I was fortunate to see the young Gloucester middle school and high school kids there. When I got to that one little area early, there was a huge group from Manchester and Essex Regional High School there as well. And I just thought, wow, that's what it's all about. So.
There was a really great signs down in D.C. A lot of young children holding up said, you know, I think they said along the lines of, heads up, we vote next, or my generation votes next.
Yeah. And by the way, make sure your children vote.
There you go. It's all about it.
Yeah.
So that's great. So we're continuing the coyote talk. There was action after the coyote that mauled the dog that was tied up and left outside on Rocky Neck. And Val Gilman and
Scott Memhart.
They filed an ordinance to add coyotes to an existing ban on feeding pigeons, seagulls, terns, and other waterfowl downtown. Now, we had a little bit of a conversation about this. Like, it's kind of, you know, it's downtown, and does this really, is this going to be a big, like, I think there are, we spoke about how the challenges of enforcing these type of things, but we came away with, after the conversation, saying, if anything, it's more awareness, it can provide some awareness to tell people, secure your trash and don't feed. There's been reports. Are you saying that there are people that are actually feeding coyotes?
I don't know about downtown, but I've heard from repeatedly that there's a woman on Atlantic Avenue feeding the coyotes.
There's somebody on Eastern Point that was feeding them so they could get photos.
And I've heard that as well, too.
Yeah, the letter to the editor is the effect of
it. And you got to leave them alone. My feeling is you got to leave them alone.
Well, and the worst thing in the world to do is to feed them, because that's like the problem they were having in Florida with the sharks, like feeding the sharks. And so then sharks were moving, you know, into this area because they knew they associated people with, they associated humans with food. So, you know, I we didn't talk about this before, but I have a theory about, because every time I see coyotes in Gloucester, they just look bigger and bigger and bigger to me. So, this is my theory, based on everything that I've been reading about them, is that I know a few wolves have escaped from Wolf Hollow, and so if the wolves, as we've learned, have a species will breed with another species. Right.
She can't help herself, but put herself in the crosshairs with these psychotic people from Wolf Hollow. They are psychotic.
You
don't know this by now. We've been for five years every time you talk bad about like wolves, especially if you mentioned wolves.
Oh, no,
you are directly in their crosshairs right now.
No, but this is helping the wolf people. I'm saying the people.
You're blaming them that the wolf escaped and is crossbred,
but
and that's the
wolves.
But what I'm saying is that we know that coyotes have varying degrees of wolf DNA in them, varying from from teeny tiny amount. I mean, I've written about this 20 times. But the coyotes are so large here that, so suppose they have a tiny bit more, I'm just saying, a tiny bit more wolf DNA, and they're in, like, the Ipswich area, right? Or then, where are they gonna move to? So they're gonna move out towards, they follow the ocean, right? So, because they're scavengers, so they eat along the beach.
On that PBS special, they said that they follow the railroad tracks.
Yes.
The main way that they made their way around.
Yeah. But we don't have railroad tracks, so here we have the ocean. So we do have railroad tracks, so I'm just saying. So they're following the railroad tracks or the ocean, they're eating along the ocean, so then they get to Gloucester, right? They get to Cape Ann. Well, not only does Cape Ann have great, you know,
golf
shoreline.
Golf courses, because they say golf courses.
Right, with fabulous shoreline, with, you know, tons of dead things washing up all the time. But we also have very congested areas with tons of people with garbage. And garbage is left out at night, and then they can scavenge in the garbage. So all I'm saying is that we could have this, like, which brings us to the point about not trying to start a fight with anybody, but just saying, wouldn't it be awesome if we could track some of the coyotes on Cape Ann?
When we talk about all the measures that the city can do, to me, and we've spoken about this in the past, the number one thing, if I was a city councilor, what I would be asking for is to try to appropriate funding to track. And to get a baseline on what we have for coyotes here right now, to put the blow dart in them and tag them, see how far they travel, where their range is, and learn more about them, because we do have to live with them.
And then we can make our own PBS
special. I take exception with you saying that the wolf hot, because we don't, because I think that there's a lot of speculation there, and I'm on record for
what you said on your post. There's 4 million dog bites a year.
Yeah.
Well, I was just repeating
I thought that was really good because.
And seven, recorded human bites by a coyote.
Exactly.
It's kind of.
And I'm sorry. Sometimes I don't go to Wraith Chasm when it's dark outside. I know better because I can hear them out there. Why would I?
I love seeing all that
wildlife.
We have foxes over
in
West
Clark
too. They've gone after chickens.
Yeah.
You have foxes?
Yeah, we have foxes.
I haven't seen a fox locally forever.
My brother had one in the yard, grabbed one of my brother's chickens.
Yeah.
Actually, there were two fox.
Maybe the fox explosion is due to the number of people that are having, because the chicken, like people having chickens in their backyard has gotten.
We have
to be
a fox.
We
have a little den on Old Salem Path.
No, they're all gone because of the coyotes. We don't.
And the fisher cats.
I find carcasses all the time up in the woods from the coyotes.
You do? What kind of carcasses?
Turkeys and.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I think the fisher cats.
The other part is that the coyotes, it is not a problem that's just, or it is not an issue that the coyote population has just exploded on Cape Ann. I speak to people from Maine. Yeah. They're everywhere. They're all over the place. And and with them being all over the place, we aren't hearing about daily maulings or daily bitings of humans, especially. I mean, and that's who I'm really concerned about is humans. And because if you do, you see how that... The little dog that got mauled on Rocky Neck was such a big story because it doesn't happen that often that the news from Boston came out here and blew a story on it. If it was an everyday occurrence that it was such a problem, then they wouldn't send a news crew out to cover it.
Well, I think the reason why that was covered is because it was such a close neighborhood. So, for example, like, just the week before, I know about 3 coyote pet killings. Do you know what I mean?
Like, locally?
Yeah, like Chris Anderson lost his kitty to a, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just saying, I think it is happening with more frequency. I think it's not. I think the reason why this story blew up was
that's
because
funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting that Chris Anderson's cat got things because he is a monster advocate of coyotes.
Yes, and he's not saying anything. He also has chickens, chickens.
Yeah.
And the red-tailed hawks get the cats, too. So
that's a big exposure to them.
Yeah. And, you know, if I had a cat, I wouldn't let it outside. You know,
we lost our cat after he begged and begged and begged. We finally relented and let him outside, and he didn't last a couple months once he started going outside.
You know, the red-tailed hawks, when they're... I can see them,
Swoop
and sometimes
down.
They look down at me like, "Oh God, I hope he's not gonna grab me." But you know, you wouldn't want a kitty or a bunny or anything like that because they just pick them up,
running freely.
You know,
too long.
All right, so Donna, how are you involved? Are you involved as too, Pauline? Winter Cabin Fever Market at the Magnolia Library and Community Center on Sunday, February 12th.
Yes.
You guys are both involved in this?
I'll have a table at it.
You'll have a table. Are you an organizer, Don?
No.
Who are the organizers?
I think it's the library, but I think Melissa Cox had an idea. She said, what are we going to do in February?
Yeah.
You know?
So some of the vendors?
The vendors are Pauline, myself, Melissa Cox.
Premier Imprints.
Press is going to be there, the new restaurant on Lexington Avenue.
LuLaRue.
Those are those tights.
I know. I talk about them all the time. Kate's like not interested in them at all.
Yeah.
I thought that she'd be, because Kate is all about being warm and comfortable and everything else. For some reason, I think she said she's not interested because the prints are a little funky.
One of them looked like it had sausage on one of them, and I'm like, why are these sausages?
Cooked around
corn.
Some
of them are polyester, too, right?
Yeah.
Are they made out of polyester?
I have no idea.
I
just know that Bridget Matthews, there are people that talk about this brand, and they're all up in it.
You know, I love tights, but I only wear cotton ones because, like, you have something so close to your skin. You don't want, I mean, for me, I
but you need
like
the well, I use them for the gym.
You have LuLaRue?
No, I don't have them, but I'm
talking about
myself.
Tights.
Yeah.
Well, these things.
Well, you have tiny
cotton.
Little legs.
Cotton.
Legs. Yeah.
But I think it'll be fun because, first of all, it's after the Super Bowl. So what do we do that Sunday?
I think the timing is perfect because it's 2 days before Valentine's Day. So all the guys that are out there that wait till the last minute.
And there will be food there, and the library, they always make it look really pretty in there.
Are they going to have food vendors?
Press is there.
Okay.
Huh?
Press.
What's press?
Remember I did a
Okay. My next question was to you, what is going on with this new restaurant that I'm hearing about?
Press. I did it.
It's on Lexington Ave?
It's on where Duncan's used to be.
Okay.
Great.
Who are the people?
The guy is Scott the chef, Scott Spencer.
And what's the premise?
It's panini, soups, breakfast. It's breakfast and lunch.
Mm.
He did a beautiful job inside.
Mm.
White. Counter stools and nice little conversation areas.
So Panini Press kind of must be the whole thing.
It's gonna it'll have muffins, and you're gonna able to rent out for dinners, like for a bridal shower or a rehearsal dinner. He's going to have one of those provincial licenses, I guess they're called.
Yeah.
But I went in there and I talked to him. And I videotaped him, and it looks amazing.
Did you post this?
I did.
Oh, I have to go back and check it. I'm sorry, I missed it.
I got a lot of play on it. People were, they were like, I can't wait.
Well, the Magnolia people are big supporters of Magnolia Adventures.
Right, and it doesn't serve dinner, so it's, you know, but breakfast.
Is it like build your own panini?
I don't know what he's going to do. He has a full stove, full
is
there oven.
Is he going to do pizza?
Probably.
Because there's a void there right now, right?
Yeah, because that's not going to be happening.
There's a literal void there.
But I think that it looks beautiful in there. He did it with the, like, very bright, lot. It has a
it
lot of windows.
Contemporary from the...
Very contemporary, very conversation area, so you can sit.
Very fresh and nice.
Yeah, he did a really, really nice job in there. I was really... They're going to sell macaroons, this... And one of his super helpers is actually...
It's like a cafe.
Yeah.
Cafe.
She's a student at Colby for hospitality and opening restaurants. So she's his intern, and she's really with it.
Great.
Doing the social media, so they'll be there.
Magnolia just keeps just... They just keep banging.
And the deer are swimming off the beach, so there you go. I have been waiting to get a photo of that deer swimming. There's a deer swims out to Kettle Island and comes back.
Really? Oh, how
they
cool
swim.
Yeah, they do swim.
They swim, and there's a deer there. But come to the winter market.
It's on the 12th of February.
I hope we're right beside each other.
Yeah, we'll be here. So
what are you going to be selling there, Pauline?
I brought in some Valentine's stuff special for the event. You know, socks and jewelry and scarves and stuff, and then I'll have some painted items, some new birdhouses I'm hoping to have done. My buoy bird feeders, which have been
big
just
sellers.
So popular this year.
So you don't just rest in the winter. You don't just hibernate.
I just came back from a nice long rest, so now I'm ready to go.
Where did you go?
I was in Florida for the month of most of January.
What city?
Nice. Highland Beach, right near Boca, Delray, in between,
yeah,
right
Boynton
there
Beach.
Yep.
Right East Coast. Represent.
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale. A little south of Fort Lauderdale.
Uh-huh. I thought you looked
tan. Yeah, I've been down there just doing nothing. And
yeah, do your husband do some sailing down there?
No. He's going to be doing the Bermuda race this year, though, again.
I hope he doesn't have any kind of malfunctions.
Oh, my gosh, that was crazy wind. But, no, this Bermuda race is usually 5 days.
You're also a big part. You're very involved with Ringo Tarr puts the flags on the boulevard.
Yeah.
Every year.
Yep, donations, we do them through the store and through the veterans office down on with Adam or Lucia down there.
I'm going to back up so people that are listening to this that might not know who you are. Pauline Bresnahan owns Pauline's Gifts. It's on Essex Ave in West Gloucester.
Yep, 18 years.
18 years in business. Big time part of the, you know, she's all very involved in tourism in Gloucester, goes to all the meetings, a lot of input, very vocal supporter of local businesses. She worked with Ringo, so you can actually contact her. I'm sure you can contact. They can contact you through your Facebook page.
Yeah, we've been doing them.
And and they take donations to sponsor flags for the boulevard.
Yeah. We've actually Ringo's hoping for at least 1 year, and I said once you start it, it's going to be hard to pull back to go the flags all the way to Stage Fort Park now that the boulevard is done, and that will be close to 300 flags.
Wow.
So we've had lots
of
donations.
Can I ask how much that cost, 300 flags?
Well, they're $20 a donation per flag. He gets about a season and a half out of a flag. We had a lot donated this past year. I think we've gone through probably 120 this past year donated. But they're constant, you know, and
I got one for Christmas. My daughter.
Oh, that's
sweet.
In your name?
Contacted Pauline.
Well, that's a
sweet
idea.
So, I'm excited about that. Going along with this theme, the Elks has this Welcome Home to Cape Ann, We Left the Light On for You initiative for returning vets. Pauline promised us that she'll put some more information about this on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
Right?
And a lot of businesses can donate gift cards. These are given to any veteran returning to Cape Ann, Rockport, Manchester, Gloucester. They give them a bag. They asked me a couple years ago at the Elks to design the logo, so to cover all of Cape Ann. So I did the Annisquam Lighthouse, and I named it Welcome Home to Cape Ann, we left the light on.
There's a tie-in with the light. Yeah. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah,
very
so
nice.
That's where the lighthouse is on the logo. So the bags are filled with information for the returning vets on services that are available to them. But a lot of businesses, whether it's a haircut, a car wash, mm-hmm. a free breakfast, I donated gift cards, and actually one of them came back on Veterans Day.
How many have you done? This is the third year, you said?
This would be the third year. Last year,
how many did they do last year?
16 bags.
16 bags.
16 veterans returned to the area. The year before it was 8. So I'm
going to donate 16 Good Morning Gloucester t-shirts.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, what a great thing to have in the bag.
They will love that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's
right?
awesome. They'll have the event. We'll be at the Elks, and I'll let you know. I just got in touch with Adam. He said it is in March, and I will have information about if other businesses or people want to donate anything, whether it's a cup of coffee, whatever. It's sort of to welcome home these people back to our area and to let them know what's available in the area. And that some of them have families, children, wives,
it's
to let them feel that they can go in and to these businesses.
If you can send Donna a post with write it out so she can copy and paste it into a post,
that'd be great.
So then we could say, okay, if you want to get involved, because that'll be an actionable thing rather than talking about it.
And you're going to get so many people on.
It's wonderful. Last year, the bags were given out. There was about $800 worth of gift certificates in the bags. I mean, Adam Kukuru and Jane Morse over at the Elks were blown away by the amount of generosity in this community.
That's fantastic.
Send me that and I'll put,
Information specifically who they need to contact to be a part of it. We'd like to send our condolences to the Tarr family, Brian, Bruce, Ringo Tarr, for the passing of their mom.
Yeah.
Was it this past week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a great Gloucester family,
yep.
Good Gloucester people. There you go. I just want to, anybody else have anything they want to add in towards the end of the podcast? Okay. I got one last thing to say. Okay, our good friend, Craig Kimberly, huge Steelers fan. But when the Steelers get knocked out of it, he becomes a huge Patriots fan. So the question is, Craig's going to the game today. What do you guys think? Do you think he's going to be wearing his Patriots shirt underneath his
Absolutely.
Steelers shirt? So as soon as when the Patriots go up big, he'll just rip off his Steelers shirt and stuff it in his bag?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen, Craig.
What's going to happen?
Deal with it.
Deal with it. Hey, you can't, he's, either way, I love Craig. I absolutely love Craig and Hannah. One thing I'm not a fan of is, maybe I'm jealous, but I don't think you should be able to have it both ways. Because no matter what, he has a team going to the Super Bowl. No matter what, he has a team. He lives on after today. But he deserves a monstrous ration of shit if the Patriots win today.
Yeah.
And I think he would agree with me.
I'm already nervous, though.
I'm nervous, too. But
So today is a very important
day. Oh, my God. It's do or die.
Yeah, thank
do
you.
Or die.
Well, last week was do or die, too.
All right.
But
there you go. All right. There we go. GloucesterCast 215 is in the books. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.